What's up, my party people? It has been a while, but I'm back. My name's Rich. Welcome to another episode of BTC 2.0. I thank you for the support. This week, we have writer Paul Tobin on. Paul Tobin, well-known for Plants vs. Zombies, and also Bunny Mask out from Aftershock. I did this interview with Paul a little while ago, but it's timed perfectly because guess what? The new issue of Bunny Mask is out this week. Bunny Mask, The Hollow Inside. It is the second chapter of the Bunny Mask series. Fantastic book. If you like quirky horror, you'll like this. You know, Paul does such a great job with this book, and we talk about a lot of stuff. Check it out. Hey guys, welcome to the show. Paul Tobin. Paul, how are you?
I'm pretty good today.
All right, it's good to hear. You're on the West Coast, right?
I am, yeah, Portland, Oregon.
Awesome, awesome. I have to go and visit Portland, Oregon. I have a lot of friends out there and a lot of people I know in comics that are like, if you enjoy just a chill time, come out to Portland.
Yeah, that's awesome. The comic scene here is actually why my wife, Colleen Coover, and I moved here, because we lived in the middle of Iowa and there wasn't a burgeoning comic scene there. It was like me and Phil Hester, and that was really it. So I think it's better now, but yeah, back in my day, we moved here in 2004.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you've been there for some, you're almost like a regular at this point, right?
Yeah. I can't say I'm a native, but yeah, it's my town.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Did you guys specifically move there just for the comic scene?
We were trying to decide between here and Boston, and we visited here and ended up, like, the first day we were here, we ended up at a dinner with like five or six like major comic book creators, and we're like, oh, okay, yeah, that settles that.
Right. Yeah. Did you even try to give Boston a shot, or was it just like a one and done kind of like wow. Yeah, that's awesome. So you've been in comics for quite some time, if I'm not mistaken. Did you grow up a fan?
I absolutely grew up a fan. Yeah. My grandmother was a garage sale aficionado. She would go to tons and tons of garage sales, like seriously multiple times a day.
Wow.
And she would buy everything. And so like going to her house, there were just boxes and boxes and boxes and stacks of stuff. And I would just go through them and sort of omnivorously read every comic I could find. You know, it was like old Dell comics, old Marvel comics, old DC, just anything, you know, Harvey comics. I read everything. I loved the format. So
what were your standouts growing up and reading comics?
I loved the Hulk and pretty much any horror comic I loved, even though they were really cheesy back in then. But I have a great love for cheesy horror, so that wasn't problematic. I don't know. Yeah, the Hulk was my guy. It was fun finally getting to write the Hulk. But I found out, like, as far as Marvel superheroes, the Hulk is like one of the least fun for me to write, just really? Because he does, like Spider-Man was more fun to write because he has this whole like support group and things like that, and like a Hulk story is just generally based around Hulk Smash and things like that. And so I sort of needed, you know, you can tell a deeper story with Spider-Man or some of the other heroes. So my faves as a kid aren't necessarily my faves to write.
Right. Yeah. I find that talking to a lot of creators, that's often the case, you know, as much as they love Batman, it's like, yeah, this is almost impossible, you know, and that's kind of like one of the fun and funny things about comics. So when did you first get your start in comics? Were you writing ahead of time before that? Was the goal always comics, or was it something else?
The goal was actually never comics. I didn't, it's sort of a collision of what your questions here, because my goal was never comics. I didn't think you could do comics. I had like favorite comic creators when I was a kid. But to me, they were just like completely, you know, alien. It didn't occur to me that someone else could do comics, and certainly not someone in Iowa. I thought you needed to live in, you know, like within a block of Marvel Comics and things like that. But I went to college at the University of Iowa, and I met Phil Hester, who I mentioned earlier, there, and he was already getting his start in comics. and kind of struck up a friendship. And he's like, well, you want to write some for me? And it kind of just grew from there. So my friendship with Phil was like a seminal moment in my career. I think every creator can look back like several times and say, you know, there was this moment that kind of changed things. And meeting Phil was one. Moving here is another. Getting to know Jeff Parker here, because he got me into, Jeff Parker was doing Marvel Comics at the time. And he said, hey, you want to do some Marvel Comics? I'm like, yeah, I'll do some Marvel Comics. And my career kind of, you know, started to raise at that point.
And now you're mainly focused on like indie books and original graphic novels.
Yeah, that's sort of my love. I mean, I just have far more control, and it's disheartening. I mean, I still love like all the Marvel books and all the DC books, and I think they're fantastic. And a lot of my friends do them and do really good comics. But at a certain level, there's the, you know, you build an entire story and then they say, hey, you're, you know, 7 issues into this arc, but now we have this crossover. So can you have the Submariner invade? And it's like, okay. which is also kind of fun in a way too, because I think it makes you think about your story in a different way. And, and I have a certain love for stories that don't take the arc you predict, like where, I can remember there was an issue of, or a run of Cerebus, which is a comic that I kind of grew up reading as far as professional, that it went for a long time, and about 20 issues into the arc, some guys just break in and kill a couple of the main characters, and it's just like their story ends, it's just over. And I kind of think that's fascinating, to have a story not have a beginning, middle, and end, because that's not really the way life works. So sometimes I think it's fun to see a beginning, middle, and then everything goes haywire and there really is no end.
Yeah, that's a great way to put certain storytelling elements. And I think it's very tough to do something like that in mainstream books, you know. Any comics, though. Go ahead.
There's a one of my, I didn't realize how big of a influence Steve Gerber, the writer, was on me until like a few years ago. But I can remember there was like a whole run of Defenders that he wrote where there's an elf with a gun, and he's like slowly like coming. He's a background character, but he's got a gun and he's coming for the Defenders. And then just kind of off panel, like 8 or 9 appearances in, he gets hit. I believe he gets hit by a car, and that's it. The Defenders never meet him, you know, and it's just like this storyline that ends with not with a you know, triumph or defeat, but it just gets chopped off. And I think that it fascinated me as a kid to see a story that was just like, you know, ends, doesn't complete, just dies.
Yeah. That's such an interesting like little note to specifically again for mainstream books. And like, you can get away with so much more stuff on like indie comics. Like, for example, your book Bunny Mask that you did with Andrea Moody and Taylor Esposito. I got some copies right here. Love the book. My wife loves the book. There's something very, very cool about it. So talk me through the process of like, how did you get hooked up with Aftershock? What made you write Bunny Mask? And also, the part 2 is coming out next month, or
I forget exactly when it gets released. And we're having there's a Bunny Mask comic for Free Comic Book Day too. So
awesome.
We're really excited about that. Like that one has like, I think 5 pages of Andrea's artwork, but then there's Roberta Ingranata, who's a really great artist, is doing like the main story in that one. And she it was kind of fun to see. It's really kind of strange because we're talking about doing indie comics. Generally speaking, when as I form a team, there's like, we do a comic and it's me and it's an artist. So it's always weird to see a different artist's interpretation of the character, because you really don't get that, because indie comics are basically, here's a team.
Right.
So it was really fun to see Roberta's work. But yeah, I, me and a friend pitched some stuff to Aftershock at some point, artist friend, and I didn't like any of them. Mike Martz is like, yeah, this one just doesn't work for us. One of them had like a prison break in it, and he's like, for some reason, we have three comics right now with Prison Breaks. Oh, wow. Like, I don't need a fourth. Yeah. But he's like, why don't you pitch something else? And so I pitched a couple of things to him, and Bunny Mask was one of them. I grew up watching like a lot of horror stories, in particular, like the old Hammer films. I don't know if you've ever seen any of those.
Oh, absolutely. I love those. Yeah.
And they were always like, they were like horror, but also like big-breasted village girls were a big part of the Hammer films. So like the two, like, and I think like sort of horror and, for want of a better word, sensuality have always been kind of mixed. The two elements are like, you know, tense and mix well together. So I wanted a scary book where there was, I don't want to say that Bunny Mask is pretty, but she has an element of sensuality to her. In a really scary sort of way. So I just wanted to sort of meld those two elements together, like my love of the Hammer films. And I think there's a little Dario Argento in there and some other directors and a lot of the Japanese directors in particular, like influenced it.
Little Takashi Miike.
Yes, thank you. I got the wrong name in my head and I wasn't getting there. So, I mean, it's just kind of a blend of all those elements. And then I had run across some like really creepy, runs of women in bunny masks out in the forest and dark, you know, thing. And I was like, oh, you know, I want to explore this. I want to see about this. I have a great love for like elder creatures and elder beings of great power and things like that. So yeah, it just kind of all came together.
Yeah. It sounds like you threw in like all this stuff you love and you made, and the book is fantastic. I definitely can see now that you mentioned like the Hammer horror elements and there, I feel like that style of movie making I also love, because I have an older brother. So I grew up with a lot of that stuff, you know, like also still one of my favorite Frankensteins and Christopher Lee, you know, like just like completely gnarly looking. But those movies did a great job of combining, you know, your horror elements and, like you said, sensuality. You know, have you ever seen the original Wicker Man?
Yes, but a long time ago.
That's a great example of blending like psychological horror with a lot of like, with like a fertility story, you know? So give that like a rewatch. I think it holds up in a very odd way. You know,
I remember it pretty well. And I remember, like you said, the psychological horror, and that's the horror I like. I don't necessarily like huge monsters that burst out from things. I like to feel unsettled and creepy and sort of, I mean, there's some really great Korean horror films where almost literally nothing ever happens, but you're just on the edge of your seat the whole time, just going, oh my gosh, you know, and it's like, oh, what's this one about? Oh, there's a drip of water that comes down from the ceiling. And it's like, what else? No, that's it. The whole movie, this drip of water keeps coming down. It's like, it's so scary.
If it's done well, you can get away with anything. Are you current at least a little bit with like the horror stuff now? Like what does it for you?
I'm not really watching too much. Other than it seems like I keep watching some, I don't know. Does Squid Games count as horror? I guess it counts for me. I enjoyed that. And I just started watching All of Us Are Dead, which I like. I'm on sort of a zombie kick. I get on them every now and then. I go to a climbing gym a lot, and a friend was asking for good horror. Zombie movies, and I'm like, oh, you gotta watch Train to Busan. And then I, having said that, I'm like, well, now I need to watch Train to Busan, and then, you know, rewatch it, and then now I'm on a zombie kick.
throw on The Beyond, the Lucio Fulci flick. That's one of my favorites. Oh, you've never seen it?
No.
Oh my god, it's visually stunning. Very loose premise that a gateway to hell opens and underneath a mansion in New Orleans, right? Mm-hmm. And this detective and this woman have to like kind of stop it, but it's the zombie stuff in it is great. The visuals in it are great. I think my wife and I watch that movie like at least like twice a year, you know. Okay. Like The Beyond, it's great. I think if you're on a zombie kick, I would suggest that, like, before watching anything else, you know. So you were saying, when is part two coming out? It's later this year, right? Are we gonna see the same characters, or are you gonna, is it gonna be more of like a jump back and forth to kind of get to the bottom of the whole, the bunny mask and the totem stuff and the elder
we'll
creature?
We'll see a little more. It's the largely the same cast. Tyler and B, and we get a little more of their relationship. Rillo, the roommate, Sheriff Tate becomes, or stays sort of a main character. The snitch, who was quote unquote the villain of the first one, is sort of a background character now. There's a new creature called the Hollow, that they kind of have to fight. The Hollow is a creature that, literally deletes your existence. If you're one of his victims, you just have literally never existed. Nobody will remember you. There's no trace of you. You're gone. Which is something I think a lot of people fear, is like, you know, it's like, when you look back on your life, you can go, well, I did this, I did this, you know, I accomplished this. But if the Hollow gets you, you've never existed. You've never done anything. You're forgotten. It's over. Which to me is terrifying.
That is terrifying. That is very terrifying. Now, that's awesome. Like, I want to see more. And also, like, for me, the book, the first four issues of volume one, I guess, really, for me, while reading it, I could totally see it as like a series on like Amazon or Netflix. And I'm sure you've thought about that as well. You know, maybe somebody will pick it up. That'd be cool. You done your own kind of fan casting for who would play who in this world?
I have, but I don't know any names. The woman that I was thinking about, what's his name? Steve Cottrell, or what's his name? Does the Space Force comedy. The girl that plays his daughter,
okay,
I think would make a good bunny mask. I mean, she has the look, and she does comedy, which to me, if you can do comedy, you can do horror.
I agree with that. Yeah.
If you have either of those, you can do the other one, because they're all about, like, comedy and horror have the same stem or skeleton of pacing. Everything's about pacing and getting that tension and then the delivery. And if you can do one, you can do the other. So I'm pretty confident that woman could make a really good bunny mask, because she's got really good comic timing.
Oh, that's a great little statement right there. I agree with that 100%. Like, yeah, that makes me want to see like a Kristen Wiig in a horror movie. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be scary.
So you're clearly a fan of comic book art, and I noticed you have some original comic art behind you. When did you start collecting the originals? And like, is that kind of like, I know Phil Hester has like a ridiculous collection. You know?
Yeah, I have what I would call a ridiculous collection too. I mean, yeah. The stuff you're trying to see what you can see on the wall. There's a Johnny Craig War Against Crime cover, a Dave Cooper thing, Jay Disbra, Richard Sala. That's a Graham Ingalls page there. There's a Jack Kirby Captain America page there.
Wow.
There's a Wally Wood Weird Science Fantasy page. There's a Jordy Bernay thing back there. Another Richard Sala, Hugo Pratt. Oh, there's a Stan, like right above my head right now, is a Stan Goldberg Millie the Model cover, which I, you know, so I have some good stuff. But yeah, I was collecting so long ago that it was very affordable. Like, I have a Frank Miller Daredevil page that I probably wouldn't sell if you offered me $100,000 for it.
Wow.
I paid $75 for it back in the day. So
yeah, I can imagine. I think within the last 5 years, original art prices have like skyrocketed.
Like, I can't afford to collect anymore. It's like pages that I'm like, it would cost like $2,000 or $3,000 just to get a page that I'm mildly interested in. So yeah, I don't really collect anymore. There's some stuff I would still get, but it's like newer stuff. Well, I used to like to collect the classics. Like I have quite a few pages from EC Comics, because I'm an EC Comics fan.
Yeah.
I have a Bernie Krigstein page. God, I forget how many I think I have seven, no, eight. There's a, you can't see it, but there's a really nice Jack Davis page, one of his classic pages there. I love the old EC art, but as far as affording it now, poof, no way.
Yeah, it's wild. It's very wild. Like I do remember, like, even like 20 years ago, you know, where I'd work at like my local store and we'd do conventions, and like you could buy affordable pages from like pretty much any, I think, from pretty much anybody apart from like a Jim Lee, you know, whose pages always went for like a crazy amount of money, even like 20 years ago, you know. And now it's like, it's, you really have to have like deep pockets to get the stuff you want. Like, I knew this one guy who years ago when I was working at that store, like let's say 20 years ago almost, he would buy every Steve Epting Captain America page he could get his hands on. You know, and like he would drop like serious money on this stuff, and like now who knows how much all that's worth because of the movies, you know. Is there something that you like, is there a holy grail for you as far as like original pages goes? Like you have a original Jack Kirby Captain America, I would assume that's like,
That's a nice thing to have. I don't know, you mentioned Phil Hester earlier in his collection. Phil has a page from the Frank Miller Daredevil where Daredevil fights the Hulk.
Okay.
And that issue for me, anything from that issue would be really wonderful, because that's an issue where I started to think about how I wanted to write comics and how I wanted comics to be, because it felt real. Because Daredevil, I don't know if everybody's aware of that issue, but Daredevil fights the Hulk and Daredevil nearly dies. He never has a chance. The heroism in the story is that he's even trying. But he just doesn't have a chance. It's not, you know, even going, okay, here, I'll use my powers to hit the weakest spot on the Hulk. And it's like the weakest spot on the Hulk is 1,000 times, you know, more powerful than Daredevil will ever reach. So it doesn't make any sense. And I thought it was great because, you know, I, as a guy who grew up reading, you know, oh, this is, you know, Galactus versus Spider-Man. So, you know, an even battle. It's like, no, it wouldn't be. You know, nobody ever wanted their hero to lose. And so that Daredevil versus the Hulk issue to me was like, oh, this feels a little more grounded. And I really enjoyed that. So yeah, Phil's got a page from that. That would be nice. I'd like a Will Eisner Spirit page.
Oh boy.
That would be nice. I do have a really nice Will Eisner big drawing, but I'd like a Spirit page.
Oh, that sounds awesome. So let's go back to your writing a little bit. Like, what's your typical process like when you're starting a new book?
Well, I tend to like to develop the characters first. Story is kind of secondary. I mean, certain characters live in certain types of stories. So it wasn't like I came up with a character of Bunny Mask and then went, oh, is this a teen comedy? You know, I already knew it was a horror book. Yeah. And then I sort of developed the story. I have sort of what I call an accordion method. Okay. Like I sort of want to stretch things out. So I'll write, once I have the characters sort of set in my mind, and I only sort of set, because really when art starts coming in, it can change things so, so hugely that it changes my views of the characters and how I want a story to go. So I don't like to get set until some story or until some art comes in. But during the whole process, I like to come up with the story as a whole, like a paragraph of the story, and then kind of expand that into what happens in each issue, and then expand that into what happens on each page, and then expand that into what happens on panel by panel. I'm a dialogue first guy.
Okay.
Some people like to do scenes first. It's all dialogue for me because I feel character is more important for me, and that the dialogue is where the characters might feel real to me. So I just sort of expand and expand and expand.
Are you now, as far as like the technical stuff goes, like how are you using a program to write? Are you just doing it MS Word, handwritten? Like what's, you know, like what do you prefer to do?
It's on Word. It's all on Word. I all of those programs, like I have writer friends that are like, oh, you know, you spend all your time doing these indents and things like that, but that could just be done for you. You know, it's like those become obstacles to me. Like I'll try to do something, like all this pre-formatting is just screwing me up. So I like to format everything by hand, and I have a set process, you know. I like to I need to type things at a certain time. And if I don't do a certain thing at a certain time, the page doesn't quote unquote count. So
right.
I don't want formatting done for me. I don't want programs. I want to build the script. That's actually really, that's a deeper question than I thought. Like when I first started doing comics, I had thought like if you write a screenplay, you have to stay within the smallest boxes possible. It's like, mm-hmm. well, you have, you know, 401 words on this page and only 400 are allowed. Now you mm-hmm. leave this building, you know? But like every step of my way, as I got into comics, I thought someone would teach me how to draw or how to write scripts the proper mm-hmm. way. But when I first got my job at Marvel or first started writing for Marvel, I thought, well, certainly here I will get taught the proper way to write a script. Mm-hmm. And so I asked the editor at the time was Nate Cosby, a great guy, great editor. And I said, so how do you want me to write the scripts? And he said, but I don't know what you mean. I mean, well, format. How do I format? And he went, I don't care. Do it however you want it. Okay. And as I got to know other writers, it's amazing the changes, the differences in how comic book writers write scripts is amazing. I think I'm sort of on the middle to high scale as far as how much detail I put in. Mm-hmm. I'm more detailed than most of my friends. Well, any of my friends, but at the same time, I'm not Alan Moore going, you know, I wrote a 12,000 page novel for this 20 page comic. But yeah, I think my scripts right now, I'm working on an Aftershock script now for a series we haven't talked about yet. Mm-hmm. And 24 page comic. And that usually ends up like 8,000 to 10,000 word script somewhere in there. And I try to do... especially in early issues, there's usually quite a lot of reference images too. Mm-hmm. Like this character will wear this type of clothes, you know, and just other reference images. Like if a writer calls out, you know, oh, I want him to draw, you know, this character drives a Tesla. I think it's lame for a writer to say, this character writes or does it, you know, drives a Tesla, and then not put in, here's an image of a Tesla. Here's an image of, you know, at one point he opens the trunk or whatever. So here's trunk space. Here's what it looks like interior, things like that. I don't like mm-hmm. writers that make their, if a writer is calling for a certain specific thing, like, oh, they're in this national park. Well, then put in some images of that national park or things that. Because really, for the most part, artists don't have a whole lot of time because of the series aspect, you know, so anything a writer can do to lessen the load for an artist, I think they should.
How is it like working with Andrea Moody?
I love it. He's so excited. And you know, we do like Zoom calls and he'll put on a bunny mask and I'll just talk to Andrea as bunny mask. We're actually, he made a little, bunny mask, doll that we're actually, for I think the next trade, we're going to do a bunny mask comic using photos of the doll.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, he's a blast, and he really hit the characters, which I really like, and his color scheme I think really adds a lot. So yeah, he's a blast. I love working with him.
That's always good. Your face lit up when you talked about it. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions and then I'm going to let you go. All right, Paul.
All right.
Cool. All right. What is the sandwich of your dreams?
Sandwich of my dreams?
Yes.
Wow. Well, roasted red peppers, probably some sort of turkey. I like turkey in a sandwich. Tomatoes, hummus, black olives. Sun-dried tomatoes and tomatoes. I have to say, like, I ordered this sandwich, my sandwich at a place the other day, and the guy that owned it, like, said, okay, because it was a choose all your own ingredients, and he looked at it and went, okay, so I can make you this sandwich, but I need to let you know, this is going to be the sloppiest sandwich, and you're going to need so many napkins. I'm like...
Let's go for it. Yeah. That's an awesome sounding sandwich. Where could everybody find you online, Paul? And like, what do you have coming out soon?
Well, Twitter is basically the place to find me. I do have a website, but I can't say that I update it very much. So Twitter is where I do most of my social media, or just interactions. And as far as what's coming out soon, boy, the More Bunny Mask, Calculated Man, which is a crime series, we're putting it out. I'm running through projects in my head and trying to see which ones
we can talk about.
Yeah, there's three that haven't been announced. There's two more comic series, and then there's an online one, and there's a graphic novel I'm working on, which is a food-based graphic novel, which is really strange for me because I'm not a foodie, but it's becoming interesting to like do the research, because I'm a research heavy guy.
Okay.
I like to do like a lot of research and then put as little of it as possible in the word. Because I think if you know things, it sort of comes out. But if you start to, you know, I read a lot of like crime novels, and I always hate when it's like, you know, he pulled, you know, his, you know, XR-15 gun with the 7.7 ballistic bullets. And it's like, yeah, you did your research. I understand.
Right. Yeah.
You don't, just calm down and say he pulled a gun. You know, it's like, you know, so I like to know things, but I don't necessarily like to inundate a reader with facts.
Less is more.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, I really appreciate it, man. It was fun talking to you. I hope you had a good time. That was a lot of fun. Paul is a great guy, great guest. We had so many technical difficulties trying to get the interview started. It was probably on my end, but when we finally made it happen, it happened. And he's welcome to come on anytime he wants to talk about comics or movies or anything original art and just like fandom, which is kind of what I want to keep this show about. Listen, we're moving onward and upward. I got some pretty cool guests lined up, and we'll see. You know, I've been spreading these out a little bit. You know, I wanted to do them every 2 weeks, but now it's like every 3 weeks, maybe once a month. Listen, it's my show. I can do whatever I want. Also, go buy your comics, hit the subscribe button to this show, and a huge birthday shout out to my brother Patrick and to Andrew Zarian. Later, guys. Mwah. See you soon.